I'd like to welcome you to the next Global Health Perspectives podcast. I'm Derek Yach, and I'm the president of the Foundation for a Smoke-Free World. It's my real pleasure and delight to welcome Darshita Gillies to join me today. Darshita has a fascinating background, which we'll obviously touch on, and a deep commitment to philanthropy and to having impact in the world through the way in which philanthropy is actually designed and implemented. And of course, at this time, sitting in the midst of a pandemic, it becomes even more important to ensure that dollars being given or funding granted really has the impact in people's lives at a time of absolute and unprecedented crisis. But let me start off, Darshita, by really just asking you, how did you find the journey that led you to where you are now in London? And I think it'll be fascinating for people to understand your roots in India all those years ago.
Yes, thank you, Derek. And I'm really delighted to join this podcast series as well. I think this is a fantastic way in which we can keep connected and share thoughts and ideas. My personal journey started in Mumbai. I think even before that, I was born in a time where India as a country had the highest female infanticide rates globally. So just the fact that I was born is a miracle in itself, that my parents did choose to have me. I grew up in a very humble home. With a brother and sister and my parents, we lived in a one-bedroom apartment. And I say my journey is from the bottom 1% to the top 1%. And I mean that in terms of I really know what it's like to live the bottom 1% life. My parents don't speak English. They are very conservative. My father comes from a scheduled caste background. In India, we have a caste-driven society, which meant that as a community, we were amongst the lowest caste as well. And my early life was really marked by poverty, debt. We didn't have food sometimes at home. When I was writing my professional exams, we didn't have money to pay for electricity for 3 months. And the night before the exam, they cut off the electricity. And I still remember that night. I said, I'm not going to cry tonight. Tonight, I need to study and I will pass this exam. And this is the way out for us from the situation we find ourselves in. And it was the exam where I came 50th in the whole country of 100,000 students that write the exam. So that set me off on a very good path. And then my journey on the top 1% began. I started as a chartered accountant, as an investment banker. I decided I wanted to explore more. I went into consulting. I started getting invitations to join boards, which I was very interested in, to have a leadership role in really enabling organizations to make decisions that were more holistic. That also sparked my entrepreneurial curiosity of bringing technology into areas that have not leveraged the power of technology. So that sort of was my journey from bottom one to top one. And at the same time, I feel like I started questioning meaning and whether life is just about just becoming successful, and if it was more than that, what would it be about? And I feel for me, it's also been investment in my personal self. I grew up in a very conservative-minded house, which meant that I also had limiting beliefs, and I was very shy, and I was very socialized. Don't speak to men. Don't speak to elder men. Always listen, be meek, be an introvert. So,
We know a lot of that is gone.
kudos
to you. But let me jump to now.
The output is a more balanced global citizen.
Yeah, and let me jump to now to Manch, MAANCH.org, for those who want to learn more, which really, you know, I've spent many years in different aspects of public health, in a foundation, in a donor agency, in a government. And I thought that your framing of matching for impact was really something desperately needed and often assumed but not practiced. So I'd love you just to talk about the whole concept of what it means, not just in terms of the Matching for Impact, but the way in which you've brought 21st century technology to bear in actually starting to address specific support for the SDGs.
Yeah, thank you. And thank you for bringing the SDGs, because I started Munch. Munch means platform in Hindi, as a way for us all to see our contribution towards the future we all want to see. Philanthropy is so personal, and yet if we go to the essence of what philanthropy is, we all want to make a difference, and we all want to contribute towards those who do not have necessarily the good fortune as some of us do. We want to ensure that this money is deployed in the best possible way. That said, I think there are some systemic challenges in philanthropy that can be easily addressed by technology in very simple ways. We don't need any advanced, even just with the technologies that we know, there's no advanced research required. We can just streamline our processes. And if we just look at COVID now and the COVID-19 pandemic, that's really shaken ground for not just from a health perspective, but also from a wider sort of societal implication perspective. This is the time where philanthropy needs to step up. It needs to count, and it needs to make sure it's being used for where it's most needed. At this point in time, we see two parts of the philanthropy system. One is the receivers, the organizations that I would say, I call them impact enablers. They are the ones who go and do the job and get it done and deliver the goods and services that are needed. And then on the other side, we have the philanthropists, grant-making foundations, corporates as well, who give quite substantially. And then there are core processes that are common to the giving process. What we have done is we've looked at the challenges from a receiver's perspective as well as from the funder's perspective. And as much as possible, we've tried to technologize that so that all those interim checks and balances, all those interim systems that can be technologized don't need to become individual costs for individual organizations. An example of that is due diligence. Charities at this point in time need funds. They need them fast, and they may need them on a continuous basis, and they may not be applying to the same funders. So can we use blockchain or any similar technology that there's a shared architecture where organizations that have been due diligence are available so that they don't have to spend time and money in going through due diligence with individual funders? So that's one example. The other is philanthropy is not just mainly up until this time, or mainly it ends with transaction. You give money and then it's finished. We all see that we all want to know what's happened. And by knowing that we've made a difference, we are inspired to give more. And that's another thing that Munch makes it very easy for funders, is to know exactly where the funds have gone, not just in terms of spending, but also the kind of impact these funds have generated and how this enables us to create that long-term future. So how relative that impact is towards us achieving the SDGs. So all in a nutshell, I would say the matchmaking is really understanding the motivations that forge collaboration, finding that connect point and making it available by a technological medium. So it's simply knowing what the funders want to see happen and knowing what the charities can deliver and finding that close match so we can spend less time in making many applications and spend more time on doing the core activities we actually set out to do.
Is your platform able to also identify one of the thorny issues, which is that we know that generally in the foundation and the development community, people define a set of what they believe are priorities on content, and they could be SDGs, and priority countries or communities, and then others which are not on the favorite list get neglected, yet they may have substantially higher levels of underlying poverty or need or whatever it is. How do we bring that to light? Does that expose in the system? Are you able to expose where are the real gaps against objective need versus actual investment?
Yes, and I will caveat that by it's only going to get better with much better data. At this point in time, from the UN Statistics Division, we have data from 157 countries who report back at a very granular level every year on how they progress towards each of the indicators on the SDGs. And what that now enables us to do is highlight to funders, if they are looking at funding from a thematic perspective, let's say we want to fund something in mental health or we want to fund women empowerment, through this map, we can actually see which countries need that kind of investment the most, or which kind of interventions are most needed to achieve higher rates of better health or higher rates of more empowered women.
Yeah, now with you mentioned obviously the pandemic, I think it's impressive to see how you've set up the ability for people to donate in certain areas related to COVID-19. I'd love you just to talk about what kind of response you're getting. And before you talk about the response through Munch, just to know how's your family doing in India, and what are you hearing out of India? Because we hear stories of government acting very swiftly on the one hand, but some real worrying trends about the blaming of subgroups of the population for the outbreak.
Yeah, happy to touch on all those points. So firstly, from a sector perspective, what we are seeing is just 2 weeks ago, we had a phone call with about 20 different foundations and philanthropists, international and as well as UK-based, on how are they responding to the crisis and what are the challenges they are facing. And everyone came back unanimously. They are doing their bit, but they don't know whether it really counts. On the other side, every single day on the platform, we are receiving every hour, three charities are signing up to fundraise on average. So the need for funding is immense, and there is no clarity on what's being funded and what's not being funded. So we are launching a global dashboard, which is a crowdsource initiative available for anyone and everyone around the world to put their projects and to put what they have already funded so that visibility becomes shared. So that's on just overall from sector perspective and philanthropy, what's going on. In terms of India and personally, my family, I also mentioned we live in a very small house and my parents still live in the same home. And my brother and sister, they have a little room where they share. They have a little corner where they go for their work and another corner where they go and sleep, but it's all in the same room. And the lockdown is quite intense and quite strictly observed. People are not even allowed to go outside of their local areas for shopping, for groceries. So it's quite strict. There are instances of domestic violence that I'm hearing just from personal stories. So there's a lot of on-ground challenges. In terms of politically and how the country is responding, I feel like there is so much out there, and I feel like it's very hard to trust one single source of media in terms of whether that is real response or is it just something that's being inflamed. I learned from some of my best friends are Muslims, and there have been a lot of religious media as well in India in terms of just sort of naming Muslims as a community that are not necessarily being helpful. And I just called my friend and I said to him, I just want you to know that friend to friend, I don't believe this news, and I know that as a community, you would not do it, but I don't know what else can we do to make right from news that's not necessarily real.
Yeah, and I think we know that the spread of fake news at this time is, we knew it was getting worse, but at this time it's really at a hyperbolic level of fear. And we interviewed previously Shlomi Madar, who's running the Signals platform, where they're picking up actual chatter in a range of social media about stories that could inflame at this time. I think it's going to be important to keep obviously a lid on it. But let me just end off by asking a question that I think we need to think of for the future. The potential, of course, of this pandemic to have a long-term sustained impact on philanthropy could be for good or it could be for bad. And I think to the early days of the HIV/AIDS epidemic, where every single philanthropy and foundation ditched their work that they were doing for HIV/AIDS, and what suffered were vaccine programs, maternal and child health programs, development programs, mental health programs, and the area where you sit on our board on tobacco control basically got wiped off as an issue since there was only seen to be one priority. How do we make sure that we actually keep the broad-based approach to health needs, societal needs, the importance of gender in the aftermath of the pandemic?
I think that's a very big and important question we all need to be reflecting on. One of the reasons why I joined the foundation is because of that big audacious ambition and the systemic nature of the work that we put out, which is, it's not just looking at the issue in isolation. Let's stop smoking. Let's look at what is the ecosystem within which smoking sits, and how do we ensure that we strengthen and build capacity in each of those communities as they move from one activity to another activity. I think here, when we sit in terms of, we have an amazing opportunity in this sort of void where we sit in our lockdown spaces to think about what is global, and I call it wealth, WHEALTH, which is money, but also health. And I, when the SDGs were announced, I picked one SDG, which I said underpins everything else, and that's health. Global health is one big thing. If we do not address that as a foundational matter, everything else that we sit on collapses, and we see that now. So I think I would say, firstly, we need to raise our ambition as to all the pledges and all the monies that are being now injected into the economy. What do we want to use them for, and how are we going to realign in the spirit of creating that future that we want? Or are we going to use the money to resuscitate old industries and old challenges that we know don't necessarily serve the future? Having sat in home now for almost a month, I know there are a few things I know I don't need. But I was just perpetuating those industries because they exist. So I think a lot of question for big sectors to think in terms of what is the future of the sector, and how do we raise our collective ambition is a question I would like for us all to be thinking of when we're thinking of whether it's philanthropy or whether it's any social cause or economic cause. And my urge for everyone would be to think upstream. I think going down and investing lots of money downstream, trying to find, we do need to find a vaccine, but we need to be proportionate in terms of how much allocation of funds and attention we give towards one thing that solves a current situation, and how much are we prepared to invest in that long run, which requires to be thinking system-wide.
Yeah, no, that's I think very wise, and it reminds me of the president of the Carnegie Corporation a few years ago, spelling out the difference between charity and philanthropy. Charity addressing immediate needs, and philanthropy addressing underlying causes. And of course, now we have no choice but we have to address both and find the right balance. Dashi, really, thank you very much. It was a real pleasure to have you on our podcast. And I hope that all of you listening will actually send questions and information to us at podcast@foundationforasmokefreeworld.org and join us in future. Remember, please stay safe, start thinking positively about the future and do the kind of audacious thinking that Darshi is challenging us to do. Thank you very much.